This is KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. You're listening to Issues and Ideas, the show where local voices tell the stories that keep the Central Coast connected. I'm David McAbee. On this week's show, we head into the world of creativity and craft at the Central Coast Writers Conference with director Megan Freeberg. Then have you ever wondered how a poet finds his voice? I sit down with my childhood friend, poet, author, and fellow Cayucan, Luke Johnson, as he shares the spark that drives his writing. And finally, grab a blanket and a glass of wine. We're talking movies under the stars with Bradley and Wilder Simmons of the Paso Picture Show. It's nostalgia, cinema, and community all rolled into one. All of that coming up on Issues and Ideas.
Hi, this is Megan Freeberg. I am the director of the 2025 Central Coast Writers Conference.
Why don't you give us a little history of yourself?
Well, I'm a freelance writer. I've always been a writer, even throughout my various jobs as kids were growing up. You know, I've worked a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And I'm a journalism major, and I'm working on a couple of novels, but mainly I do freelance writing for some local and national magazines and newspapers. Gives me the freedom to work around my family life. And as far as the Central Coast Writers Conference, I first stepped through those doors probably about 12 years ago, just as an attendee. I was very nervous and thought, do I belong here? You know, it's a writers conference. There's all these published authors and, you know, people that I've only read their books or seen their movies. But immediately I felt welcome. That's one of the things about the Central Coast Writers Conference. We want everybody to feel welcome. And before you knew it, I was volunteering, and then I became the volunteer coordinator for about the past decade, which do a little bit of everything doing that. This year, I've stepped into the role of being the director, and I'm very honored and humbled to take on this position. I've worked just about every aspect of the conference, and to be leading this now is, as I mentioned, it's just an honor. I'm excited for this year. I'm excited for the presenters, for the writers, for everybody who's coming to the conference.
Is there any added pressure being the head honcho?
I have such an amazing staff at Cuesta College. It is the Cuesta College Community Program Central Coast Writers Conference. And so the staff there is just amazing. They've been through this many years. It is our 41st annual, so it's been around for a while. And then I have past directors who are helping guide me, and that I've come to know over the past decade or so. And just their input is priceless. I have a volunteer coordinator who stepped into the role that I used to do, and she's really helping me a lot, Carol Vitale. And then I have an advisory committee, a slew of volunteers, and it's really the Central Coast Writers Conference. We all kind of take ownership of it. It's our conference. It's our Central Coast Writers Conference. It's an annual event that we just are so excited about. And so just the pressure, yes, is there, I think, as a director, but also it's just an excitement. I think that's the only word I can really come up with is just the excitement. And I just know and believe that it's going to be a success, because I have so many people who this conference is important to, and it's just going to be great.
Can you give us a little history on the Writers Conference?
So as I mentioned, it is the 41st annual, and it was started that many years ago by a trio of ladies. One of them is Lillian Dean, and she was employed at Cuesta, and she organized and brought forth the very first Central Coast Writers Conference. We do have a special award that is awarded each year, the Lillian Dean Inspiration Award, and just honoring her commitment to this. She's no longer with us, but her legacy carries on, and it carries on through past directors, including Dave Congleton. He has a local radio show. Judy Salamaca, who has been very involved with the conference. Kathy Fien Olson, who is still very involved with the conference, Terry Bayes, who has mentored me along the way, Brian Schwartz, who took over as director the last couple of years. It's a very rich history of people that are locals that care not just about the conference, but just writers in general. It's our, we like to say it's our passion project. It's a lot of work, yes, but it's a passion of ours. We love it. We can't wait to welcome new writers. That's the best part. We are always hearing from people say, I've been thinking about coming for so long and I finally did it. But once they come, they're going to come back year after year because they'll get it. They'll get why they should be there.
Who can benefit from the Writers Conference?
The theme this year is it's time. So this conference always has been for everybody, but I believe that this year even more so. So whether you are a teen writer, we are bringing back the teen program, and you just want to learn a little bit more and how to delve into the craft, whether it's comic book writing, whether it's fantasy writing, whether it's young adult writing, whatever it is, if you want to write a screenplay, you're going to learn that as a teen writer. If you're maybe you're a young mom that has a little extra time on her hands and you really want to delve back into poetry and you want to learn some aspects of how that is relevant today, you're going to learn that. Perhaps you're a retired school teacher and you just have always wanted to learn a little bit more about memoir. Well, we have classes for that. Perhaps you're an 85-year-old grandma who wants to just write her memoir for her family. You know, you're not thinking about getting published. You're just publishing it because you want to leave behind a little legacy. Whatever it is, there's something for every level, for every genre, whether it's beginners, whether it's somebody who's looking to get their screenplay made, whether it's learning about how to build your author website. We have something for everybody. So if you are a writer, if you write, you are a writer. It doesn't matter if you've been published, just come. We welcome everybody.
I love that there's no barrier to entry. If you write, you're a writer.
Absolutely. I mean, I talk to people, you know, not even just with the Writers Conference, but just, you know, in the community, if you're traveling or you meet a new friend or a friend of a relative and they're, oh, you, what do? You're a freelance writer. And they might say, well, you know, I write too, but I also do this. So I'm not really a writer. And I always ask, do you write? Well, yeah, but just in my journal, or I do this little blog. I'm like, then you are a writer. Claim it, claim that title. It doesn't, you don't have to say, hey, I published this book or whatever. I mean, that's great. I would love that, you know, everybody's able to do that, but that's not everybody's desire or their goal. But if you write, you are a writer. You know, when you mention barriers, that's what we hear from time to time where people hesitate to come to the conference. Because they do see some of the, if you go on our website, CentralCoastWritersConference.com, and you see the presenters and you see their bios, you're going to be wowed. But don't be intimidated. They are people. The charm of this conference, with it being Central Coast Writers Conference, as you know, SLO County is just kind of the slow county where we're just easygoing most of the time. The presenters, wherever they're coming from, they love coming to this conference because it is that entire atmosphere where it's very welcoming. It's very down to earth. And yes, you will be mingling with people that you might have read their book or seen their movie, but they're just as excited to see you. Do not be intimidated. Do not put up your own personal barrier to say, I don't know if I should go. Please, if you want to come, just come. You will be so glad you did. And you will, you know, look back and go, why did I wait so long? Why didn't I just go? I need to be here year after year.
Tell us about some of the presenters this year. Who's speaking?
Oh my gosh. We have over 45 presenters this year. We've got such an amazing lineup, starting with our keynote speakers. Our opening keynote is Brooke Warner, and she is just an amazing author, book coach, memoir writer. She does podcasts, and she's done a TEDx talk that is just amazing. She is dynamic. She is kicking off the conference. That will be Friday night. We do have sessions Friday during the day, and you can see that on the schedule. But then after a meet and greet, we're going to have Brooke, and she will get you fired up, I'll tell you that. And she's so approachable. We are thrilled to have Brooke with us this year. And then we have, during the different sessions, we have writers and presenters that are talking about business, whether it's Becky Moscoffian talking about how to create your PR kit, whether it's Luke Johnson talking about poetry and how he, you know, is able to balance that with his family life. Or we have Jordan Rosenfeld, who is coming to us and teaching a masterclass and talking about fiction and different genres. We have something for everybody. And then leading up to the closing keynote on Saturday, that is Rob Edwards. And he comes to us from the glorious land of Hollywood. And he is just the nicest, most humble man you have ever met. If you read his bio, you'll go, whoa. And one of his films this year was Captain America, Brave New World. He's written for like In Living Color, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. We are going to do, he's going to have the closing keynote, and he's going to really fill you up with inspiration to take you past the conference. We added a special event. So the Palm Theater reached out to me because they heard that Rob was going to be at the conference. And they were super excited about that. So the conference is on Friday and Saturday, September 26th and 27th. But they said, if Rob's in town, do you think he'd be willing to do a film screening kind of, you know, at the Palm Theater, which if you know about that, everyone knows the Palm Theater is just an iconic, historic, charming theater in downtown San Luis Obispo. And so I connected with Rob, who is, again, a great guy, and he's, I'd love to do that. So on Thursday, to kind of kick off the conference, Thursday evening, September 25th, Rob and the Palm Theater in cooperation with the Central Coast Writers Conference will be showing The Princess and the Frog, which is a Disney film. And it's such a wonderful family film. Kids love it, adults, it has just enough mention that the kids, the adults get the jokes, you know, but it goes over the kids' heads. And so we're gonna have like a little reception at 5 o'clock. Doors will open, and you can also pre-order the tickets on the Palm website. And then the screening will start at 6, and we'll have a little interview with Rob, and it's gonna be fantastic. So again, that just speaks to not only Rob, but the other presenters. They're thrilled to be at the Central Coast Writers Conference, to be in San Luis Obispo, to be in Morro Bay, Paso Robles. Just, they love the area, and we're honored to have them there.
I also think that says something about our community, where the Palm Theater reaches out to you. Hey, we want to be a part of this. People are reaching out because they know that it's valuable, one, but again, they just want to be part of the community.
I completely agree. And we hear that a lot from the presenters who have visited us from out of the area time and time again, that they, if they come back, there's just something about this community. They say, oh, I love that little conference, you know, and because it is smaller, you know, we'll say there's going to be maybe 200 people, where at one of the larger conferences, which are amazing. I love going to the big conferences, and you get something out of each type. But this, because it's more intimate, and you really have the community members involved, you have the sponsors that are community members, they just believe in this conference, and it's all about community and the writing community. So, you know, you, for the writers, they're going to find somebody that they're going to connect with.
Tell us a few things that you personally are excited about this year.
The teen program is coming back this year, so that is very exciting. And thanks to the generosity of some of our sponsors, the teen program is only $75, which is a killer deal. The other thing that is exciting to bring back this year, which we haven't done since 2019, as you know, a lot of things changed in 2020 during the pandemic. So we had to take it online in the pandemic. There were certain things we could or couldn't do. And then the next couple of years, we just had a couple of little programs online. And then the last 2 years, it's been one day. So this year we're coming back 2 days again. This is the first time since 2019.
That's great.
Yes. So it's a lot, but it's exciting. One of the things that we're also bringing back is the master classes. I'm super excited about the master classes, and those are exclusive 3-hour sessions. And we are offering 8 of those this year. So it's limited to 20 students, and that will be before the actual conference starts. You do not have to be signed up for the regular conference to take part in master classes. Anybody in the community can take these, but it is a separate fee. It's $150, and there's 8 sessions, but you get really in depth with whatever that subject is.
What can people expect from the Writers Conference?
You're going to be able to delve into your craft. You're going to be inspired. You're going to be encouraged. You're going to be motivated. There's so many things that you will take away from this conference, and each person takes something different away from it. You know, whether it's that they are finally ready to publish something that they've already written, or they finally connected with a critique partner and they just need somebody to really help them delve through things. Whatever it is, you're going to find it at the Central Coast Writers Conference.
Give everyone the info. Where can they buy tickets? What are the dates?
If you go to our website, which is centralcoastwritersconference.com, on the homepage, you will see the dates, which are Friday and Saturday, September 26th and 27th. On that website, there'll be a link for you to register for the regular conference. Right now, the cost is $300. If you are walking the day of, it goes up to $325. There's also a link on there for the teen program, which is just $75 for ages 13 through 18. And then there's also a different link for the master classes, which are $150. So all of that is on there. There's also links, if you scroll through the website, for the schedule. It will show what's happening all day on Friday and also on Saturday. It's a lot of fun. It's very busy, but it's fun-filled and something for everybody.
That's great, Megan. Thank you so much for joining us today on Issues and Ideas. And I'm excited to see you and all the other writers at the Central Coast Writers Conference.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you having me on. And I can't wait to see you at the conference, David. I know you're gonna be there. And I just appreciate the opportunity to invite people to join us this year.
My name is Luke Johnson, and I am a poet from San Luis Obispo.
Thanks for being here today. It's cool having a fellow Cayucan in the booth with me. It's cool to have other artists from our tiny little pin drop of a surf town.
Yeah, I shouldn't have said I'm from San Luis Obispo. I feel like I'm guilty of that because Cayucos is such a little pin drop. When I say Cayucos, most people go, "Where's that?" When I say San Luis Obispo, they're like, "Oh yeah, I love that place."
It's funny how I always described where we grew up as that. It was like, "Oh, I'm from San Luis Obispo," because people knew where that was. And it was a way to just like, that's where I live. But the older I get, I say San Luis Obispo because I don't want you to know about Cayucas.
Exactly.
Tell me about your journey of growing up in Cayucas.
My journey of growing up in Cayucas was an interesting one. It was a time in the 90s, well, the 80s, really, 80s and 90s, when, believe it or not, folks could survive on one income. And so I feel like it was the kind of the glory days of town. Lots of kids, the school was bustling, and there was this great network of parents who kept dibs on all the kids and in a really cool communal way. I feel like I learned a lot about community growing up in Cayucas and the importance of friends and neighbors and how we're all family in some form, you know. At the same time, I was living in a single parent household. We were struggling. And I hid that a lot from my friends. So that's kind of a side of me that I don't think a lot of my friends really understood.
How did that affect your relationships growing up? I mean, you say you had to hide it a little bit, so you're not showing your full true self to a lot of people.
Yeah, I think I felt ashamed a little bit. A lot of my friends by no means had like perfect lives, but to me they did. You know, two parents in the house, and their parents owned a house, and it just seemed like they were living the life. Now that I've grown up, I realize they were probably middle class and paycheck to paycheck, and it wasn't just some, you know, glorious experience. But to me, that's how it felt, and so I think I felt a little bit of shame around my situation. And so just naturally being a boy and an athlete, I thought I'll just kind of stuff it.
How'd that work out for you?
Well, it worked out great in that it gave me a lot of fuel for my poetry. But obviously there's been lots of therapy as well as I've aged.
Were you drawn to writing? When did the bug start to crawl and start to itch on you?
That's a question I get asked a lot, and I try to do my best at answering it. I grew up in a beautiful time in the 90s when I think music was peaking. We had the grunge movement. We had the punk rock movement. I think rap was still great with the LBC rap. It was just a really good time, I think, in music. Before the boy band era, which was the late 90s. And so I was actually drawn to music like most young people, I think, during that time. It was pre-social media, so we weren't stuck on our phones. We were just jamming out, listening to music. So I actually played in bands before I really became like a writer. I played in some punk rock bands, sang. And I was an athlete, like I said. So there was this part of me that loved music and art and was also an athlete. And then my junior year of high school, I actually quit the basketball team. And I'd always seen that as like my core identity growing up. And when I quit the basketball team, around that same time, the band I was playing in high school broke up. And we broke up mainly because I was drawn to these like deeper lyrics, and I was playing with a bunch of boys who were like, I want to write slapstick stuff, you know? And so we broke up, and I also lost basketball. And so I was kind of thrust into this weird time of my life where I was like, well, what do I do now? And I remember someone handed me a collection by Robert Frost, and I really didn't like his work, but I was drawn to who I assumed he was. He was like this masculine, handsome dude. Come to find, he also was an athlete who wrote these really deep, complex lyrics on the page. And something about how I assumed his personality was, and just the look of him, drew me to poetry a little bit. And I thought he was kind of a rock star. I was like, this guy's cool, you know? And that was sort of like my open door, I think, into writing.
So from Frost, do you go on to explore other poets and other writers and then start writing? Or is it a quick pen to paper movement?
So I was the main lyric writer for the bands I played in. So I did have this propensity to, I think, deeper, more meaningful lyrics on page. I didn't think about it as a writer. I just thought about it as a singer in a band. But I did have that natural inclination. And then I meet Robert Frost, or the persona that I thought was Robert Frost. And I did think to myself, okay, I'm drawn to depth. Here's this guy who looks like, or he resonates sort of the same way I do, just in his look and his love of certain sports and stuff like that. And so I did start dabbling with poetry, terribly. But I was definitely drawn to it. And yeah, I started like scribbling down some stuff. And then I went on to like Emily Dickinson, all like kind of like the classics, and tried out and tried to copy them and do stuff like that, again, pretty terribly. But yeah, I would say pretty soon after I was introduced to Frost, I tried it out.
Well, you mentioned before that also at the same time, you're kind of hiding your family life from people. Are you also hiding that you're writing poetry? Because again, this is late 90s, early 2000s. I'm sure you weren't wielding a flag that says, hi, I'm Luke Johnson, I'm a poet. I mean, you were, again, growing up together, I know you as an athlete. Mm-hmm. I know you as a reader and someone who is well-versed. You can have a solid conversation, but I never knew anything about poetry.
Yeah, I think that's twofold. I think I, first of all, didn't consider myself a poet yet. I was writing poetry, but I didn't have the confidence nor the chops, I think, yet to consider myself a poet. So that naturally kind of created in me this desire. I didn't feel a desire to really share necessarily, but I will say that poetry is a niche thing. It's very niche. And most of my friends were playing in bands or playing in sports. And yeah, I mean, I felt like, why share this? Like, who's going to care?
From Cayucas, you go to Coast Union.
Mm-hmm. You graduated from Coast Union in 2000. You started writing poetry, and then we're off to college.
College was a really cool time for me. It was also a grueling time. I mean, it took me 66 years to get through my AA at Cuesta College. I say that out loud because I know someone's going to resonate with that. I was a bit lost. Some of my friends moved away, went to other colleges across the country. I never took the SATs. I was a bit of an apathetic student. So I went to Cuesta and just kind of moved around with the horde, mm-hmm. and tried different things and failed at some classes and then had to retake it and all that stuff. I share all that because the writing was sort of still happening, but I was in a little bit more of like a discovery phase of my life. And again, I didn't really consider myself a poet, so to speak. So I didn't have the discipline of that. So I was probably scribbling down stuff just here and there, you know, spot writing, but mainly just focused on self-discovery and trying to figure out who the heck I am and classes and what I wanted to do in school. And it really wasn't until I transferred from Cuesta to Cal Poly where I took an English class and a professor there took a liking to my writing. And I majored in history, and then I started writing papers for my history professors, and they started taking a liking to my writing. And then I kind of realized, oh, I might be good at this. And that's when a little more of the manic energy of, like, I want to get better at this, I'm going to write, kind of started to manifest itself.
Do you have a definitive moment where you're like, oh, this isn't just a hobby, this is now part of me? Like, I have to get these words out.
Probably that time. So, like, 2006 to 2008 at Cal Poly. It was also a really beautiful time in my life. I met my wife, and I started to figure out school a little bit. I wasn't failing every other class. I was not getting A's, but I wasn't feeling every other class. And so I started to feel a little bit accomplished, I think, just as a person. I would say I started to believe that I could do it. I still didn't think I was doing it too well. But like, I saw the gap between my work that I was writing and those I really respected. And I was very aware of that gap. But I also thought to myself, it was the first time in my life where, yeah, I thought, like, I can get there. And for sure, it began to become a part of my identity, no doubt.
For any writer, be it writing fiction, writing screenplays, being a poet, it takes everybody a real minute to find their voice. And that minute can be a literal minute, and sometimes that is a decade-long journey to find your voice. When would you say you started finding your voice?
So believe it or not, so that's 2006, 2007, 2008. I didn't find my voice until 2017. 11 to 12 years of just sort of dabbling. I got married, life started happening, had kids, was still writing, but the big takeaway for me in 2017 was I started my master's studies for poetry, and I studied with the great poet Patricia Smith. And if you love poetry or know poetry, you know her work. And I was thrust into this really beautiful environment with Patricia, where she really stretched me and pushed me to discover my voice. And I didn't really know what it was. And I remember about halfway through that year, I was really struggling to finish pieces. I was writing, I'd write a really great stanza or two, and I'd get stuck. And I thought, what is it about that? Like, what's going on here? I'm writing these really great stanzas, and then it's like my creative juices just die. And I remember I had a night where I was in my bed and I wrote this piece that didn't make any sense about a stillborn, because we've never actually been through that as a couple. And I thought I was dabbling with like something dark. I was like, "I, why am I even writing this? This doesn't make sense. This isn't my life experience." And that's when I realized, oh my gosh, I can write about whatever I want.
Freedom.
And it's not all about our stories, you know. Mm-hmm. I this sounds harsh, but like, none of us are interesting enough just to write our straight story, mm-hmm. you know. And that was the first time I was like, oh my gosh, because I'm a writer, because I have a creative imagination, because Jung talks about the shadow. I can write about all sorts of stuff. It doesn't have to just be about me. And I remember finishing that draft it was the first time I'd finished a draft in about a month, and I sent it to Patricia, and she, all she did was she texted back and said, "Now you're doing the damn thing." And it was just a simple exchange, but it released me into this whole idea of the creative universes I can build, and how my life, or me, I am the ringmaster, but I'm just a piece of the universe.
What was that feeling like? I've had that exact moment where you're like, oh, it's not about me. It's about the story. Mm-hmm. It's about the journey, whatever I'm writing.
Yeah.
Was it a feeling of freedom? Was it a feeling of elation? Was it scary?
It was all sorts of things, because the moment I realized I could write about anything, it was like,
here we go.
I brought up the Jungian shadow. It was like a lot of the dark matter, or the energies that I probably had never wanted to share, or the questions that I'd questioned throughout my life, were like, hi, here we are. Thank you for finally letting us in, you know? And so I just had it felt almost overwhelming with how much material I suddenly had. So overwhelmed, scared. I was scared. I felt a little bit vulnerable. I felt like I had revealed something about myself to my future readers, which some of them are my friends, family, my wife. I was like, wow, my kids are going to read some of this. So some of it was fear, a little fear around the vulnerability of it, just revealing oneself, what's inside, but also elation. Like, whoa, this is getting fun, because I can just world build and world build and world build, and then use my love of language to continue to build.
That also at this time you are getting published.
A lot.
Like, you go from, is this while you're taking your MFA? Is this?
Put it this way. It was super surreal. And this is where it's like, life is weird. So I was in a low residency program, and I'd go up to Tahoe. I know rough life. I'd go up to Tahoe for a week and just be a writer every 6 months. And then there was work from home in between. And there was one week where I was at Tahoe with a bunch of students, and I felt like the Buddha, just like, feed me grapes or whatever. Because I almost felt bad, because all my friends are talking about, I keep getting rejections, rejections, and rejections. And I crap you not, every day at that residency, it was like Christmas. I'd get an email from some crazy good magazine. Hey, we'd like to accept this piece. And the irony was, it happened at residency. I was just like, this is weird. But it was like this really cool sign that it's time. Me beginning to embody, I mentioned earlier, like, I didn't really feel like a poet yet and all that stuff. This is when I'm going, okay, I'm a poet.
And then in 2019, your first chapbook is released.
Yeah, I had all this work out, and I'd been published in a smaller magazine a couple times, based out of LA. And the editor of that magazine does just very small-timey, cool, kind of niche chapbooks for writers that he really cares and likes. And he hit me up and just said, hey, I think it's time. Do you want to do a chap? Actually, first he asked for a book, and I was like, let me just do a chap. You know, because being a lover of music, I was like, let me drop like an EP before I.
For our listeners, a chapbook is essentially an EP. It's like 14,
it's like
15 pages.
It's like anywhere from 12 to 25 pages. It's like a quarter of a book, but it whets the palate for the future book.
And then not too long after that, Quiver.
And that was a journey. So the beautiful thing about Quiver is Quiver taught me about the discipline of writing, because I had so many almost with that book. It was a finalist for like every freaking first book prize, but a finalist. It was like I was a perpetual bridesmaid, mm-hmm. Which I know like artists all across different disciplines and mediums can understand what I mean. I just felt like this perpetual bridesmaid, the almost, the top five out of 500, but you're not the one. Mm-hmm. And I actually started to get sick of that book, because I was just like, I knew it was really good and I knew it was going to be a banger, but it just couldn't break out into the mm-hmm. world. And I kind of thought, well, I'll write the second book and I'll let it just kind of rest. And then right around that time, I had a friend mention that Texas Review Press, which is a really good press, based out of Sam Houston State University in Texas, had like an open reading period. And I thought, okay, fine, I'll just shoot it over. By now, it had been like quite a few years of trying to get it published. The oldest poem in that book, I think, is maybe 11, 12 years old. And yeah, it pended, no joke, for a year. I'm like, okay, that's not a good sign. But I kind of like moved on in a weird way. I was just kind of over it. And then I got the yes. And that was a great feeling. And then Quiver ended up having an incredibly phenomenal post-publication life. You know, art cannot be wrangled. There's a lot of reasons why sometimes someone shoots off into the stratosphere right away and there's a slow climb. I think I'm thankful for the slow climb because it makes the most sense with my life. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a father first. I mean, most of what I post online is my son's baseball. I have so much fun with all that stuff. And if I was just obsessed with this skyrocketed trajectory, I don't think I'd have this ease I have to just let poetry be a part of my life, not all of my life. And so It makes sense to me why my relationship to poetry has been this steady climb. And like you mentioned, the cool thing is I'm still in the conversation. I've built kind of a niche for myself. I'm known as sort of like a masculine poet who deals with the perplexities of what it means to be a boy and a man. And I'm actually quite proud of that, you know, so I'm happy with where I am.
And then skipping to 2025, you're speaking at the Central Coast Writers Conference this year. What are you looking forward to about that?
I just like having my talent or whatever you want to call it, that piece of me, which is poetry and art. I just like getting to use it in a way that communicates to other people and cross-pollinates with other artists. You know, I don't take myself so serious. I mean, it's nice getting to be part of that when I'm invited, but it'd be just as nice being somebody in the seat listening. So, but I do look forward to that every year, and it's always nice, like I said, just to sort of have a shared language and take an hour or two to just talk art.
Yeah, and it's great to just rub shoulders with other artists that get it. They get the journey, they get the story, they get the process.
Yes.
And again, living on the Central Coast, that's kind of harder to find, unlike some of the bigger cities that surround us. So it's nice to find the people that speak our language. What can we expect from Luke Johnson in the future?
Well, my second book, Distributary, comes out or is officially released the 21st of September. And that is the second book in what's become a poetic trilogy. I didn't realize when I wrote Quiver, which was the first book of a 3-book series. And so that's the second book. That's a really important book to me. I might argue it's even better. Deals with my daughter's disease, some cultural violence stuff, some gun violence stuff. So it broadens out a little bit. And it's a book that I'm pretty excited about.
With this new one coming out, you kind of touched on it just now. It sounds like you're opening your world up. So do modern day news cycles, politics, does any of that play into your writing?
Well, that's kind of the point I think I'm trying to make is like, when you're a father, or for me it was when I became a father, you're thinking about particular things about now a human being that forces you to confront realities that maybe when you're single, you're less concerned about, or even when you're maybe just married at first before kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not, like I said, bluntly political, but perhaps it's like just being a father with concerns is inherently in some form political.
Was there any pushback? You said write a lot about...
Yes, I can tell you, man. I've had so much pushback. I have had... Thank you for asking that question, and I hope particular people listen to this. Quiver rubbed a lot of people wrong.
Interesting.
It did. It was sort of like it didn't fit the mold of, now speaking of politics, it didn't fit the mold of politics in 2022 and 23 and 25. We talk a lot about, and we should, about women's bodies and girls, but we don't talk a lot about boys' bodies and men. And something about that has really triggered a lot of people. but I've never been one to care. Boys deserve to be spoken for. When you look at our nation's history and people who die in war, it's boys. So I feel, having two sons, I feel this real responsibility to speak on their behalf. And I shouldn't speak so negatively of Quiver. It's also had like a lot of celebration. I mean, it was a finalist for the California Book Absolutely. Award, sold. So it's like, it's not that it hasn't had some great celebration, but there has been some pushback from particular people that just, I don't think, liked the celebration of men in their brutality and in their beauty. Art is meant to entertain, but what's entertaining you? You know, historically, poetry, good film, good music is meant to mold, stretch, and teach you. It's not mm-hmm. meant to be something that you just gorge popcorn on.
Mm-hmm. Luke, thanks for coming and hanging out today. Tell me when you're going to be at the Central Coast Writers Conference.
Yeah, I'll be there September 27th. I also have a book launch at Satellite of Love for Distributary October 24th. That begins at 7 o'clock. You can find me on all the social medias. So you can find me on X, Instagram, and Facebook, and which, you know, I have a love-hate with. But you can find me on there. And you can buy my books at the Texas A&M press site online. I mean, all over the place. You can buy it off of Amazon. You can buy it off of Barnes & Noble's. I will say one thing quickly, not to pitch this too much, but a lot of folks nowadays don't want to buy off of Amazon, and let me tell you how that actually helps presses, which you probably never thought you would have heard that in 2025. They buy at a discounted rate from presses, but they buy in bulk. So it's not like if you want to just buy Distributary or Quiver off of Amazon, you're doing me a bad. No, you're doing me a good, because as Amazon begins to kind of construct an idea of how many books they might sell, they buy instantly from the press in bulk. So do not feel ashamed if you thought, well, I want to check his work out. And you, well, I can do the, I have the Amazon Prime. I get free to, that's fine. Order off of Amazon.
Luke, we'll see you at the writers' conferences at the end of the month. And thank you for coming in today.
Thanks, bro.
Hey, I'm Wilder.
And I'm Bradley.
And we are with Paso Picture Show. So I have lived in LA the past 20 years, working in different facets of the entertainment industry. At a time, I was doing acting and commercial acting. I also moved into dialogue coaching for kids' Disney shows, which was an interesting chapter. And then writing, on always producing my own sketch comedy and content as well. My most recent writing job was I worked on the Fairly Odd Parents reboot. So it's called Fairly Odd Parents, A New Wish on Nickelodeon. It was really, really fun.
Yep, and I also coincidentally come from LA and have worked there for 20 years. Recently, we moved up to this region, and my background has always been in film editing and TV editing, and I originally started off doing reality TV and non-scripted and documentary, and then worked my way up, worked nights, did all the things, and got into scripted and film editing, and most recently worked on a Nickelodeon feature called The Casa Grandes, and that's me in a nutshell.
What were the last 5 years like in LA for you guys?
Well, a very positive thing was I met Bradley. So we actually met during the pandemic, deep pandemic.
Deep pandemic.
So we actually had a phone call and two FaceTimes before ever meeting in person.
Yeah, which, if you know, modern dating doesn't include talking on the phone.
Yes, but it was really awesome.
I like that. I do like the idea that there was some good to come out of the pandemic, you know, especially down there. It was so dark and so weird for so long. So it's cool to hear that, because everyone was like getting divorced. That's good. So you guys met during the pandemic, fell in love, married now.
Yep.
And then when do we decide to relocate to the Central Coast?
Well, without going into all the politics of what's going on in Hollywood, it is in a state of, let's call it transition right now. Decline, no.
Or implosion?
Flux?
So, you know, work kind of dried up for a lot of people. They're, you know, and so they're calling it, in our industry, they're calling it, in our circles, I guess, the great contraction kind of a thing. So there's just not a lot being made. And so we weren't working, and that didn't stop our landlord from collecting rent. And it just became an issue where we were like, well, we're going to try something else. We're kind of forced to try something else until things kind of turn around. And it just so happened that her sister was looking at moving to Atascadero.
When we had decided, we were just on the fence. We're like, do we do this? Do we make this crazy leap of faith and move? And we were at a Foster's Freeze because we wanted to get a dip cone. And we looked up, and next to us in Eagle Rock was a billboard that said, Savor Real California, Paso Robles, California. We were like, it's a sign. It's a literal sign.
A literal one. Dropped our ice cream cones right there. We're doing it.
We're doing it. So that's what brought us up here. Yeah.
Tell me about the Paso Picture Show. How is that born?
That took us a little while to come to. We got here. It was such a big adjustment. We weren't sure where or how to put our energy. Also still hanging on the hope of like, oh, things are going back to normal in LA. We'll be doing that anytime soon.
Yeah, the phone's going to start ringing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we just started trying to think about if we could bring something here, because we were really loving it here. If we could bring something that we loved here, what would that be? Mm-hmm. And so that started the conversation between us.
Yeah, we kind of landed on Paso Picture Show because obviously we have the film entertainment background. And then also we're going to wineries. So the industry in LA is film and television entertainment. And then the industry in Paso is wine. And so we're going to these wineries, and we're used to nightlife. We're used to being out. Like, you don't get home from work until like 6:30 or 7 with traffic, and you work long days and all that. So like the fact that the wineries closed by 5 p.m. was just surprising and just mm-hmm. felt like just out of the ordinary. And so we thought, well, that's crazy. These places are beautiful. How can we get the wineries to stay open later and also bring something that we love? And that's where it's like, well, let's have a movie night at the winery. You can sip some wine, watch the sunset. And as soon as the sunset is done, you get to watch a classic movie that you can't see on the screen anymore. So,
and it's an excuse. Yeah, I'm sure you feel the same way with being passionate about the movies that got you interested in the first place. It's reliving that nostalgia, watching it with a community of people. And it's so different when you see movies with everyone and the energy and excitement, especially when you know it's a good movie. People are quoting it together. People are cheering at the same time. There's a vibe. There's a whole energy about the space. And we're really passionate about those kinds of events and experiences. So we wanted to combine all of those things into something we could offer to this new community that we're building.
Yeah. So Paso Picture Show, in a nutshell, is it's like a pop-up outdoor cinema experience at the winery. We do hope to branch out to city parks. So right now it's mostly 21 and over because of the wine element. But we are going to start opening up to families and do kids, PG-13
family movies.
Yeah. We are playing around with the idea of doing something for Christmas. We don't know what just yet, and maybe a Thanksgiving show. But our show in October is going to be Beetlejuice. And then a week from Saturday on September 20th, we're showing Sideways, which we were just
fitting.
Yeah, very yes. fitting.
People have been asking for it.
People have been asking. Yeah. Yeah, we wanted to pay homage to the region. This is like a big, mm-hmm. big movie.
It's also Sideways' 21st birthday. So it's finally old enough to drink the wine it talks about.
Congratulations, Sideways. You made it. where are the movies shown? Is it a different winery every month? Is it the same winery?
Eventually it will be at different wineries. We've been lucky to secure our host winery, Bianchi Winery, for the first few showings, and they've been fantastic, and it's a really nice space. So that's where it will be on September 20th. We also are doing a special pre-show with two local authors, Mira Advani Honeycutt and Kirk Honeycutt, who wrote the book Sideways Uncorked, which is all about how Sideways affected the wine industry at large and brought the Central Coast wine region to the spotlight.
Yeah. And so, yes. So our goal is ultimately, we don't want to, even though we're Paso Picture Show, we want to be able to bounce around the entire wine region of San Luis Obispo County.
Cool.
You know, we want to be down here in SLO. We want to be up
Please.
In Paso. We don't
yes.
go to Templeton, anywhere that there's a space.
That's so cool because, again, I grew up on the Central Coast, moved to L.A., for almost 20 years. Now I'm back. So I still call myself a local of the Central Coast. And the thing about being a local is whenever people from down south or up San Francisco or any city, then they come here and there's always the fear that they're going to turn the Central Coast into the next LA, the next San Francisco. But this is such a good thing to bring to the Central Coast because it is community. And there is something that is, I hate to say going away, but maybe it is that, about seeing a movie in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And having that communal aspect of hearing the people laugh, hearing the people shriek, watching Beetlejuice all together for the first time maybe. And yeah, that's a different experience than watching it at home on a streamer. You're probably not talking about it the next day. Mm-hmm. But if you're seeing it with a bunch of people, friends, girlfriend, your boyfriend, whatever it is, you're talking about it the next day again.
Yeah,
it
it's a whole experience. I mean, you're out there. I mean, at our last show, we played Tombstone, which was our absolute favorite. And in the middle of the showing, there was a shooting star that everyone in the audience got to see. And
everybody gasped at the same time.
That's so cool.
And that's the thing people are talking about. They're like, yeah, we were out there watching Tombstone, but did you see the shooting star?
Yep.
And we're like, that's what we wanted to do.
People dressed up. People were all in their cowboy gear. It was just it feels like community, you know, which I think is hard to get. And you're not looking at your phone during the movie. Like, everybody's guilty of, including mm-hmm. myself sometimes. When you're at home, absolutely, you know.
And we're hoping that this is like, the experience is like so visceral that you're in it. You're under your blankets. You've got your popcorn, your movie candy, your wine, whatever, you know. And eventually we do want to do like food trucks and do sort of make it even a bigger experience, a bigger event. Right now, I mean, we're trying to get the word out and trying to get our audience members to come out and just like just give us a chance, just check it out. You're not going to be disappointed. And, you know, picking the movie is also a little bit of it's tricky because we're doing one movie a month right now, and we're going to, and it gets cold. So mm-hmm. we aren't sure how far into the season we can go. We are planning to stop after October for now, but we are entertaining the idea of doing a Thanksgiving and Christmas show, but then we won't come back until the spring.
Sure.
But we're hoping we can pick good movies that people want to come out and see. So
there's just too many. There's too many that we
love
as well. But yeah, and it's also still very intimate experience because they are minimal spaces. Mm-hmm. So it's not like, you know, you go to which is still fun, a concert in the park. It's like everyone in town is there and you might not talk to people even though it's a community event. But this is like a small, intimate experience and you're all sort of focusing on the same thing and it's immersive. So
Bianchi is a really cool event space. We got really lucky that they wanted to be our sponsor winery at first because they have a lawn that can fit about 200 people and they have four fire pits. And so you have the option to, you can kind of build your experience as you want. So you can come in, just get the general admission lawn seat. You can get the lawn seat that comes with the Bianchi wine and the popcorn. You can upgrade to an Adirondack chair if you're, you know, not into the lawn. Let's, you know, sitting on the lawn can be tricky. You also can bring a legless, like little beach mm-hmm. chair. So, you know, we're pretty open to that. And then the fire pits are pretty cool because you can just sit with your friends around the fire, sip on your wine. The fire pit comes with a bottle of wine and just watch the movie in luxury. So there's a lot of cool ways to do it.
Sometimes people don't want to sit on the lawn.
Yeah.
And I know I got to that age a few years ago where like, well, how much are VIP?
You know, yeah, exactly.
How much is it to get in a little early, get out a little early?
Yep, so.
Yeah, it's like I used to always go to the pit in concerts.
Same.
Now I'm like, I need a seat.
Yes.
I would like a seat.
Well, now I'm seeing those bands almost for the first time because I was in the pit and not really paying attention.
Right.
Now I'm like getting a seat and like, oh God, they are really good. You know? where can people find you?
So you can go to our website, pasopictureshow.com. Mm-hmm. We're also on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and X under Paso Picture Show.
Tell me about some of the upcoming movies you got. I know you said maybe stopping in October.
Okay. I mean, yeah. So far we've done Tombstone. We have Sideways. We have Beetlejuice in October. November, we've
been playing around this idea of doing a Thanksgiving weekend show on Saturday, the weekend of Thanksgiving, that if we were going to do it, we're pitching ideas to each other mm-hmm. right now. So I'm pitching the idea of doing National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Sure.
And
jumping into the spirit.
Just jumping into
holiday
the spirit.
Spirit.
Yeah. But then there's also like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Yeah. Like, you know.
It's like figuring out a fall vibe movie that also people will come out for.
Mm-hmm.
And then for Christmas, the one I want to play is Die Hard.
Yes.
But it also depends. It's so interesting because we're in the industry. We know this. You have to go with the film you can get the rights to at at the time.
Sure.
So sometimes the films aren't available. Because originally we wanted to start out our whole thing with Back to the Future, but it wasn't available.
It's the 40th anniversary. So I just found out they're remastering it in IMAX. So it's not available now because they don't want to dilute the audience with, like, you know, our picture show.
Sure.
Trying to build a fan base on our website. Like, so join our website, become a member,
sign up for our mailing list.
Yeah, and vote and put your votes out there for movies.
Oh, people can get out there and vote.
Yes, we want to hear what people want to see. And also for Valentine's Day, we're thinking about showing either Dirty Dancing or Bridesmaids.
Ooh.
So we'll
see. That's a toss-up.
Yeah, it is. It just depends.
We're having a Galentine's night.
Yeah. Yeah.
How can people vote?
Well, right now, if you go onto our website and you log in, you become a member, you get access to our member sort of forum. And on there, we have different polls and different things that you can, or you can just shout out, like, hey, this is what I want to see. Hey, do this. Kind of like,
you could even just direct message us on Instagram. Like, we have a running list of things that people have recommended. And whenever people do buy a ticket, we usually ask on the forum, what movie do you want to see next? Just so we can hear what people's want out
here. Taking the temperature. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what's that temperature been like? People have been writing in or
yeah, you know. Yeah. We've heard things from, like, Titanic to, what else have we had?
We heard The Hunt for Red October.
Ooh. Yeah, like some real deep cuts. People were throwing out some stuff. The secret,
Goonies.
Goonies.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, also, Brolin's from here.
I know, we heard that.
That's kind of a little nostalgic, you know. So
yeah, we should try to get him out. We'll have to get some sponsorship to get him to come out.
Oh, also the thing that you have to keep in mind is when the sun sets.
Yes.
So for these summer months, we had to pick movies that were a little shorter because most wineries have a noise ordinance to get to finish at 10.
Mm.
So, you know, in the winter months, that would be the only time we could really show Titanic because that's 3 hours
long.
That's
that's an epic.
Yeah.
You know, buckle in.
We need an intermission probably for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we might not do movies that long, but it's interesting to see what people are kind of, like, interested in right now. Yeah, like, in a perfect world, we would have a Friday night or maybe a Sunday night screening that's, like, for families.
Mm-hmm.
And then Saturday night would be, like, the 21 and over screening at different locations. And
sure.
We're really trying to get into, like, the downtown park in Paso. Or again, a perfect world situation when we're established and things are going, you know, to be doing a movie every week. Like, we already have 4 or 5 different movies just for October that we want to do because we're huge horror fans. We love spooky, like, season.
Yeah.
And we're like, we want to do The Thing.
Well, thank you guys so much for stopping by today. Again, tell us where people can reach the Paso Picture Show.
You can find us at PasoPictureShow.com and on Instagram at PasoPictureShow.com. Pretty much at Paso Picture Show. Pretty much at Paso Picture Show on everything. X, Facebook, Instagram. You'll find us.
Good. Well, go out there, follow them, sign up for the newsletter, get your votes in.
Yes.
Tell what movie you want to see.
Yes.
Let us know.
Let us know. Yes. We're here for you.
You've been listening to Issues and Ideas on KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. Our theme music comes from Gary Easter, and a big thank you to all of our guests. I'm David McAbee. Join me Monday from 1 to 2 for more stories, more voices, and more of what makes our community tick. And if you missed something or just want to hear it again, you'll find every conversation waiting for you at kcbx.org. And remember, the best stories are right here at home. This is KCBX.